Welcome to the Neurology Live Mind Moments podcast. Tune in to hear leaders in neurology sound off on topics that impact your clinical practice. I'm your host, Matt Hoffman, Managing Editor with Neurology Live. In this episode, we've got Dr. Steven Krieger, Dr. Richard Isaacson, and Dr. Jessica Ailani, the three of whom recently chaired the International Congress on the Future of Neurology. And they joined the show to offer their perspectives on the meeting, share some of their takeaways from the interactions that they had, and to offer their perspective on the future of their respective fields. So without further ado, let's jump in.
I'm Dr. Richard Isaacson, director of the Center for Brain Health and Alzheimer's Prevention Clinic at FAU Medicine. And I was one of the co-chairs this year at the International Congress of the Future of Neurology. It was a really, really special event, 2 days, where we really talked about some forward-thinking ideas, some ideas that are ready for the prime time, but I think ideas that some clinicians that are kind of, you know, boots on the ground, you know, mucking away in everyday practice, which is tough, don't get to hear all the time. So it was a lot of fun. I learned a lot, and I'm excited to share a recap with you. So I think this is such a unique focus about focusing on the future of neurology. And, you know, the thing that resonated with me at this conference is, in a lot of ways, the future of neurology is prevention, and the future of neurology is brain health, and trying to get ahead of things before a chronic neurological condition causes morbidity, mortality, harm, a reduction in quality of life. And I think it was a really hopeful message because across several fields, I'm a neurodegenerative disease expert, a little bit of cognitive neurology, it's a little bit behavioral neurology, mostly Alzheimer's prevention and other neurodegenerative disease risk reduction, in my clinical practice. But there was just a common theme across multiple subspecialties where we're just trying to get ahead of things. And I really think that's a hopeful message. There was this old saying, neurologists don't treat disease, we admire it, diagnose and adios sort of thing. Well, that's just not true at all anymore. From devastating diseases like ALS to Alzheimer's disease to Parkinson's disease to amazing new, interesting, like amazing mechanisms of treatments for migraines and epilepsy and MS, multiple sclerosis is just a different disease nowadays. The future of neurology focus was on all of these, amazing advances that just kind of, I don't want to say get lost in the shuffle. And at some of the larger conferences, I love the American Academy of Neurology meeting. I love, my subspecialty meeting, CTAD, clinical trial and Alzheimer's meeting. But the true, kind of laser sharp focus on the future and prevention and brain health, that really resonated with me this year.
Hi, I'm Dr. Steven Krieger from the Corey and Goldsmith Dickinson Center for MS at Mount Sinai in New York. And I enjoyed going to the International Congress on the Future of Neurology, IFN, which was in New York here in fall 2022. It was nice to be in person. We had a nice group of folks who came out and were present in the room for the conference, and also a lot of people who streamed and tuned in virtually. So kind of your classic modern conference meeting, which is a hybrid event, both in person and online. But it was really nice to be at a program that spans a lot of different fields within neurology. I'm obviously a multiple sclerosis specialist, but to be able to sit in talks on peripheral neurology, which included some of my Mount Sinai colleagues, David Simpson, Dr. Skelsa, young rising neurologist in that space, Dr. Rory Abrams. Those talks kind of covered a lot of emerging things in peripheral neurology, neuromuscular disease, and in particular, the intersection of that field with the COVID era. So I thought there were a lot of learnings that came out of that to open the conference. Programs on the second day included the multiple sclerosis section that I was involved in, as well as the movement disorder section that Dr. Neodis ran, cognitive and dementia program run by Dr. Isaacson, one of the things that I took away from it was, you know, in MS, we have focused a lot in recent years on reserve, which is a big part of my approach to MS in the topographical model of MS. It's a big part of what our MS Center here at Mount Sinai does with Jim Simowski's work and Alana Katzand, who runs our wellness program. So we've spent a lot of time thinking about boosting reserve through exercise and diet, positive brain health related behavior in MS. What was so interesting to me was to hear so many of the same ideas echoed in other subspecialties in neurology. For instance, in Dr. Neotis's movement disorder program, talking about boosting brain health and reserve to alter the trajectory of Parkinson's disease. Obviously, Dr. Isaacson's work in Alzheimer's has focused on Alzheimer's prevention and how diet and other brain health positive behaviors can help alter the trajectory of cognitive decline. So that field of preventative neurology seems to really span a lot of our specialties, which was something I hadn't appreciated until sort of listening to this series of programs that cover different specialties within neuro. So that's one of my takeaways from IFN.
Hello, my name is Dr. Jessica Ilani. I'm the director of the MedStar Georgetown Headache Center in the Washington, D.C. area. So as the chair of the meeting, it was really nice to be able to sit down with my colleagues and think about what would we want to hear about as neurologists today. And I thought, of course, I'm going to love this meeting because I want to hear about what's new and what's great. And someone who has the opportunity as an academic provider to attend the Academy of Neurology meetings and to go to my own local meetings, I thought, how could we bring the best speakers in the country together to really get the community involved and give everybody an opportunity? So I was very excited to hear from some of the best speakers in the area about the latest and greatest topics. So what I did not expect, to be honest, was to be so taken aback by these amazing speakers talking about the latest information in neurology that I actually couldn't get anything done. I was sitting there through this meeting, completely enthralled by the quality of speakers, listening to these topics, some of which I had seen as listed topics at the AAN meetings recently, and to be able to be so close to these speakers, not sitting like 15,000 feet away, having to watch them on a large screen because, you know, they're big speakers from the AAN and you're one of thousands, tens of thousands of people attending, and to be in a smaller room and more intimate setting, and then to go up to them after and say hello and tell them how much I've appreciated watching them through the years. And it was really great to learn updates in MS and to see where the field is going, to learn about some of these epilepsy drugs that I've been seeing my colleagues use and just not really understanding when do you pull one drug versus another. This is important to me because I cover the inpatient unit quite often, and sometimes I'm a little frightened to use these newer treatment options. I don't really understand them at all. And I came away from this meeting with a much better understanding of when some of these newer treatment options, how they compare to options that I grew up with, and when it might be a good time to pull out one of the newer treatment options and how it compares. I really came out with some fresh data, and I thought that was great. And I also came out with some tools and tricks for my patients, things that I put to immediate use after. A good example of this is cognitive behavioral therapy for sleep. This is something I've been recommending to my patients for a long time. As a headache specialist, sleep issues are very common in our clinical practice, and we've really moved away from medications for our patients. And we've been recommending cognitive behavioral therapy, but it has become impossible to find a therapist after COVID for patients to go to. And so I've really struggled with this. I tell them they should get CBT for sleep management. I go through some sleep training in my clinical practice. I talk about sleep hygiene, but then I'm kind of left like, what do you do next? And I came away with a couple of apps and a couple of websites that I can recommend to my patients and immediately start recommending it same week after coming out of this conference. So I, even though I'm a planner and thought this was going to be great, really was excited when I was there. And, you know, my complaint was I had a list of things I had to do, didn't get anything done because I was really so amazed to listen to these great talks.
Well, I like the idea of, going to a conference where you're in one place and getting a whole series of talks on different specialties. There's certainly something to be said for the major meetings like the annual meeting of the American Academy of Neurology to go really deep into different subspecialties, but they are a bit overwhelming. It's sort of a five-ring circus of things happening. And so being in a conference that's sort of a nice linear series of talks, you can kind of set shift from one subspecialty to another, see where the fields are going, draw connections between them. So I think, you know, for me as an MS specialist, it's actually really useful to see what my colleagues in other fields are doing. I do a bit of general neurology, for instance, in the resident clinic that I help to oversee at Mount Sinai. So getting some more up-to-date information on things like headache, which I don't, you know, always get in my own practice. I found that helpful. I also think, you know, one of the other advantages for trainees, for neurology residents, and we had some industrious fourth-year medical students who are applying in neurology come to this, is they get to see the whole scope of the field. And, you know, neurology residency, great deal of inpatient work, a lot of stroke. They don't necessarily get the exposure to some of the outpatient subspecialties to the same degree. Same thing for students applying in neurology. You know, how much of the field and all the different specialties have they even seen? And that might give them, you know, career ideas and mentorship ideas that they can bring with them into their residencies.
Having this singular focus and having such a diverse group of people that were all on the same exact track, you know, the questions in the chat were really interesting, and people were really attentive and focused on the material. And the questions were, you know, easily some of the best questions that I've received in the lectures that I've given over the last couple of years, because the folks in the room really were there for one purpose and trying to learn more and trying to learn what's coming around the pike and learn more about the future. And I think the thing that resonated with me most is, you know, this concept of neurological diseases, you know, many of them, you know, begin in the brain, or, you know, central or peripheral nervous system, a long time before clinical manifestations occur. And, you know, with Alzheimer's disease, the disease begins decades, you know, 20, 30 years in the brain before symptoms. We now have biomarkers that can you know, assess this. And this is my bread and butter. And this is the thing that I've been, you know, thinking about and talking about and, you know, treating patients for reducing risk of Alzheimer's for a while. But the thing that really jumped out at me this year is, you know, there was like four speakers, I think one on Friday, maybe, and three on Saturday, where we talked about this concept where, you know, if the disease starts in your, you know, 50s or 60s, in terms of the clinical manifestations, that means the disease in those people actually started, you know, 30 years before in their 20s or 30s. And that's a disease not of older people, but of younger people. And then we talk about diseases that started in people's 70s and 80s. And that's what we think clinically. That's when the, you know, the tip of the iceberg, you start seeing the clinical manifestations, whether it's cognitive decline or the tremor or whatever else it is. Well, those diseases started in the person's 50s and 60s. And that's, you know, disease of middle age. And that's when we need to think about these disorders. We need to think about biomarkers. We need to think about risk reduction. We need to think about an evidence-based plan. And the other thing that came up just time and time again in these talks was that there's just not a perfect one-size-fits-all approach in most of these neurological diseases, especially neurodegenerative diseases. Taking a targeted approach where each person, you know, receives an individualized plan based on that person's, you know, that person sitting in front of you is different. And, you know, we obviously have to go as best as we can with guidelines and consensus statements. But that person sitting in front of you is different than the hodgepodge of people, the heterogeneous group that may have been in the clinical trials. So, you know, targeting these therapies, I think the era of precision medicine is something that resonated across a variety of talks, where different people with different genes are going to respond differently to different treatments. And, you know, we see this in Alzheimer's, of course, which is my area of focus. But I didn't even realize these same conversations are being had by people across multiple specialties. And again, that's what's special about a conference like this, where you have this singular focus. We're all in the room together, you know, smaller group, but a really engaged group focused on one thing.
I think it was really nice to see a diversity of speakers and see and meet some people that I have not met before. I think that our field is becoming a lot more diverse than it used to be. That makes me really proud as a young woman to see other young women as speakers. And my hope is that as our field continues to grow, the stage continues to look different. I think that brings a lot more for the audience. You know, the cadence is different, the sound and the tone is different, and this brings more to patient experience as well. So I really look forward to seeing how this meeting is going to evolve over the next several years, how the experience might change, how we might look to change the experience in the room, the virtual experience. I think that, you know, we had a lot of fun at the meeting. We really tried to enjoy ourselves on stage and like make sure everyone had a good time. I think that if you were in the room, you could feel that energy. Audience members really laughing a lot and having a good time with people on stage and the members on stage and faculty were clearly enjoying themselves giving lectures. So I thought that was really nice. You know, you don't get that from large meetings. And when you have audiences of above 500 to 1,000, it's really hard to feel that kind of energy. So I'm really looking forward to seeing that more in the future and, you know, seeing that kind of energy evolve. And it gives us the opportunity to think creatively in how we're bringing content to smaller audience sizes where we can do more interactive programming.
I like the fact that we have the crossfires because it makes it so that it's not just one talking head at a time, but gives a little more dynamic interplay between people who may agree or disagree about nuances of management in a particular subspecialty. So in multiple sclerosis, we had this crossfire type session with myself, Fred Lublin, who runs the MS Center here at Mount Sinai, Patricia Coyle, who runs the MS Center at Stony Brook, and Erin Longbreak, who runs neuroimmunology research and the MS Fellowship at Yale. And the topic was COVID and multiple sclerosis. And the way we framed it was, will COVID-19 change MS care forever? And I think we largely agreed on the answer, which is it hasn't changed our core commitments as MS specialists to using disease-modifying therapies to stop disease activity and try to, you know, hold off progression and disability to the best of our abilities for the long term. All of our medicines are immune modulators. They all, in principle, increased COVID risks. But the real takeaway from the first 2.5 years of the COVID pandemic has been that our medicines haven't really increased risks of COVID morbidity and mortality. Now that COVID itself is more treatable, I think that is even more the case that we can use our medicines in a way that matches a patient's multiple sclerosis and not worry that we're profoundly increasing their risks related to COVID. So I think the decision-making around that hasn't changed a lot. I think we've learned a lot about vaccines. We've all learned a lot about vaccines, but particularly in the MS space, thinking about the role of T cells and B cells, thinking about how to ensure vaccine efficacy as best as we can. We've learned a lot about that in our field, and we talked about that as well. Finally, the other way that COVID has changed MS care is the way COVID has changed conferences and everything else, which is it's allowed for virtual and video conferencing to be a real part of care. So we all talked a little bit about how we have adopted that. My point has been that I think video visits and telehealth for MS can be really useful for disease-modifying therapy discussions and risk-benefit conversations, checking in on people's, you know, psychological well-being with this disease. Dr. Coyle pointed out that you really can't do the hands-on exam to the same degree with video visits. And so she, I think, pretty adamantly prefers to see people in person. I'm a little bit more flexible about it. That was probably the biggest point of disagreement that we had in our COVID and MS crossfire.
Well, I really liked hearing where MS is going, like multiple sclerosis. I think that regardless of what part of neurology you're in, we all see patients with multiple sclerosis. It's really comorbid across the range. And so many of my patients are on so many of these treatment options, and I read about them to try to understand what they're taking and how that might interact with medications that I put patients on, but also just to have a sense of what their prognosis might look like, because again, it's very different. And then to hear about where their future is going and how some of these new studies look like, And then also to hear their perspective on telemedicine. I thought that was a really interesting crossfire. Then crossfires are these conversations that the experts are having. They're supposed to be debate-like. And so you hear the pros and cons. And I will tell you, in headache medicine, I really struggled with telemedicine. I personally think there's a couple of benefits to it, but there's a lot of challenges that people, I think, don't talk about. The challenge of licensing in multiple states. I think that many providers think you're just covered if you're licensed in one state, and that's actually not true. And they did discuss that challenge, and I thought that was really nice to hear. And they discussed the challenges for the patients who are disabled, and it's really difficult for them to come to clinic, but then the importance of the physical exam. So I just loved that conversation because it brought to light some of the same challenges that I feel I'm seeing in clinical practice, but you know, not all neurologists are really talking about it. So I really enjoyed listening to that perspective and seeing the balanced views that everybody has about, listen, there's some positives, but there's a lot of negatives. And we really need to think about it in every patient. And that if you have a telehealth visit, you really need to think about bringing the patient for a live visit at some point, because you can't do an exam. And you have to be careful about the legalities. And you do have to have an understanding of where there's pros and where there are cons.
You know, this is now the fourth annual event, and I remember the first one, and it was a smaller kind of group where we're trying to kind of get to know each other a little bit. And I think that every year that goes by, we're just kind of increasing the cadre of people that are interested in the future of our field. Because, you know, the future of neurology, it's a cool name for a conference. Like, that's a cool name. That's not a marketing name, though. That's not a ploy. It's the future of neurology. It's the future of our field. And I think when like-minded people get into a room and learn from each other, you know, it leads to collaboration, and collaboration leads to better advances. I was invited to give a grand rounds actually in the chat. So I, you know, furiously copied down an email address, and it's a virtual one, so I can do it. It's hard to travel nowadays. I got two little ones at home, but that's how we do this. And, you know, we'll do a virtual, and I'll talk to the folks, and I'll get to know them. And that's another benefit of the conference.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Neurology Live Mind Moments podcast. To support the show, be sure to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. And as always, for more neurology news and expert-driven content, visit neurologylive.com.